Okay, at this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speakers meeting or 1 year continuous sobriety and attendance at a group conscious meeting. Again, my name is Marty, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's February 15th of last year. And I remember my first drink. I was 11. I got really, really drunk, threw up all over my dad's apartment. When he got home, he woke me up, made me clean the apartment up while I was still sick. I was dying while I was cleaning the apartment up, and I could not wait to get drunk again. My last drunk was after a week-long blackout when I came to at the Arrow Motel on South OBT and decided that this had to stop. And I'm very grateful to be here. Now, the group's asked me to remind you again to please make sure your phones are off and to refrain from moving or talking while the speaker is sharing. And our speaker tonight, Martin, he actually played a little instrumental part in my recovery. I first met him when I was in treatment. And I'd love to say I stayed sober after I got out of treatment, but I didn't. But he was one of the guys that brought in a Thursday night meeting at the treatment center. It was an alumni meeting. And I think I was in there for 3 or 4 weeks, and me and a few other guys got together and decided we did not like the way he ran the meeting. So I went up to him before the next meeting, and I told him that we would appreciate if he opened the meeting up quicker because we wanted to hear from the recent graduates that came back and hear all the stories about how it was out there. And he said, yeah, I'll take that under advisement. And I was feeling all real good. You know, hey, man, he listened to me. And he ran the meeting the same way he always did. And I thought to myself, how dare this guy? I've got almost 30 days sobriety. Why didn't he listen to me? Well, skip forward a little longer than a year later, I bump into him here at Central, and I'm doing my eighth step. And he happened to be on my eighth step. So he was the first person I was able to make amends to off my eighth step. So, well, you came here to hear him, so without further ado, here's Martin H.
All right. Hey, everybody. My name is Martin, and I am an alcoholic. And, that treatment meeting, it was one of the service commitments. My sponsor had me commit to a few things when I asked him to be my sponsor. And one of them was that I would at least do some service activity once a week. And by the way, that's something I didn't mention. But anyway, that's a guy that I'm working with now. But anyway, we'll have to incorporate that in the working. But I took on this role of that Marty was saying of taking a meeting into the treatment center that I was in, and. Gosh, it was a tremendous experience, and one that after doing that for a couple of years, I found in my recovery that I have to sort of change things up a little bit for me, and whether that means going to state conventions or whether that means chairing a meeting here as opposed to taking a meeting into the treatment center, it's something that I've got to do. The important thing for me, which is something that I of my own experience did wrong. One of the times anyway that I had a good bit of continuous sobriety, I used to take a meeting into the juveniles at the 33rd Street, and I did that for a couple of years, and I could feel that was getting very routine and kind of stale for me, and so I knew that I needed a change, so I stopped doing those meetings. The thing that I did wrong though is I didn't pick up any other service after that, and it was. It took about a year, but that was I look back now, and that was really kind of the start of my relapse. But anyway, so I'm going to try to go along the way that is sort of prescribed anyway of talking about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. One of the things I really enjoy about these speaker meetings is that I kind of get to know, whoever's speaking at a little different level and start to, get a little bit of knowledge about their background. And that's something that's, has been a neat experience for me. And so I'm going to give you guys a little bit of background that you may or may not know. Some of you have probably heard pieces of it. I've been, around Central a lot longer than I've been sober, and but there's been it's amazing to me. I think about that, and the people that have had just a tremendous impact on my life, You know, it's just phenomenal that's sort of come through this room. And I'm talking about significant events, you know, in my last 12, 13 years of existence, you know, and that's been a pretty, you know, I've got gray hair since then, you know, in that period of time. Like, I had no gray hair when I got here, right? I've lost hair, you know, since then. You know, these little things around my eyes started to come. They weren't there, you know, a long time. I remember seeing Ron, and I remember him saying the first time I met him, I can't remember what the age thing came up or whatever, and he said he was 42. And I remember thinking, wow, man, that's pretty old, you know. But I love him to death, and he's played a big part of my recovery. But anyway, and then the other thing I'll finish opening with this, and then kind of get into a little bit of what it was like, my daughter, I've got a 12-year-old daughter, and she asked me today, if I had any money put away for her for college, and I looked at her and I said, you know, sweetie, I don't, you know, and I made a comment to her which is actually the truth, and I was like, you know, I mean, really, life as I know it, you know, today, it really only started about 4 years ago, and so I'm 38 today, so basically up until 34. I was pretty much, pretty consistently tearing any life around me that had any chance of getting built up down, you know, and that was pretty much the way that I went from the time that I picked up a drink, or had enough anyway to feel it. But anyway, just to kind of go back, some significant things about me and my background and childhood. One of them, there's a gentleman here from Okeechobee, and we were talking out in front of that's where he's living anyway, right? Okay. Yeah. And anyway, he said that made mention that's not where he was from. A few moments ago when we were first talking about it, and I asked where are you from, and he said he spent the several years anyway in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and happens to be about 40 miles from where I was born, which was a small town called Bartlesville, Oklahoma. And I ended up having this huge gap of time before coming back, that being any part of my experience. And because when I was 6 months old, we moved to Singapore, and which is, you know, just a totally different experience. And then a year after that, we moved to a country called Indonesia. And, just some of the, not that it matters. I mean, it's kind of interesting. It doesn't really have anything to do with, you know, with my drinking and substance use. But it certainly has to have something to do with the way my perceptions and how things in this program have developed for me personally. And some of the things in Indonesia, I remember one of my earliest memories in there was a guy with a machete getting up underneath this water buffalo, right? I don't know if, anyway, they look kind of like cows, only they're bigger and have weird horns, right? But so he comes up under this, and there was all around this surrounding area were bamboo houses, like really nice two-story houses. And I remember him kind of coming up, and the water buffalo, he got up under his neck, and he takes this machete, and he slices the water buffalo's neck, and this blood just starts gushing out, right? And this buffalo runs around in a couple of circles, falls over, and then they have this huge party, right? I mean, basically, you know, that's what it, you know, let's have a feast, you know, is what that was. And it was a ceremony, you know, and that's just the way, the way that obviously they did that there. And I remember being handed in this little, it was wrapped up in some string, but it was a chunk of meat, right? And they gave this to me as kind of like this honorary thing, right? Because I was there with my dad, and we were kind of like, not guests of honor, but I mean, you know, it was a kind of a special thing, and they gave us like this premium cut of meat, you know, and I remember looking at this thing and, you know, going, what am I going to do? You know, I don't know what to do with this, right? And, you know, so that, not typical, you know, not normal. I wouldn't say not normal. It's just not typical for our, you know, for the experience that most of us have here. I remember too in Singapore, we used to go to fairly regularly because my family was a little bit unique. My mom is from Denmark, and is from Denmark, and our, you know, our family was very much. Had a want to experience, you know, different cultures and different people and you know, many kinds of things like that. So we got to do just, you know, I got to do as a child just phenomenal stuff. But one of the things that they had in Singapore, amongst other things, was Singapore was just a tremendously, it was a wonderful place to grow up, very little crime, very reserved culture, very evenly distributed as far as world religions. You know, it wasn't dominated by any particular one. But they had, there's a kind of like this extremist sect, I believe, of Hindu. And it was called, they did this thing called Taipusam, right? And it was sort of a giving thanks, you know, for well-being of the, you know, anybody had a sickness and they got better, then they would, you know, do this on an annual basis. And they would, you know, basically it was, they would walk around with these huge shoulder, don't know how to describe them, but they had like peacock feathers and incense and just very ornate and elaborate. And coming down from these things that would rest on their shoulders were these chains that would come. And they would hook into their, in fish hooks, like on rows all through, on different layers, and then have kind of spears that would stick in through their sides, right? And so they would walk like miles with this stuff, and you know, and I remember thinking, you know, that's just like, you know, way extreme, you know, and but it in some ways it was, but in some ways, you know, it really wasn't for me. I mean, that was just kind of a normal. But anyway, so that's kind of the don't get me wrong, that's not like a daily occurrence or anything, but. It, you know, it just goes to show the opportunity anyway for diversity. Now, one of the things in Singapore that they had was a death penalty for drugs, right? Okay, so you would figure, right, that with a death penalty that I would like not have any interest in, you know, in doing this stuff, especially because I lived there till I was 15, and you know, but that's really the first time where I experimented with you know, substances other than alcohol. It's also the first time that I drank enough to get drunk, and that wasn't really until I was 12. You know, I know some people drink a lot younger than that, but that's when I got started. And the first time that I drank enough to feel it was absolutely. I still remember like walking. I remember the street that I was walking down. A buddy of mine and I. You know, I spend the night at his house, and he snuck a bottle of wine and a couple of four Tiger beers, you know, and we're walking down the road drinking these things, and I remember walking into the Buzz, you know, and thinking, wow, this is just awesome. You know, I mean, I absolutely walked into this. It was almost, I mean, I walked into this dimension that, you know, for so long I wanted to get back in. I mean, from that point on, from that experience, right on, I was just absolutely committed to feeling, you know, to getting back there, you know. And I mean, my, you know, I some of the things that I kind of struggled with in early on in trying to get sober. My first experience with trying to stop drinking was when I was 21. The Navy seemed to think that having a blood alcohol level of 0.32 and, you know, talking was not a good idea. You know, it was not a good thing. So they sent me this like intensive treatment, and that was when I was 21. And you know, but my parents, you know, when I first got here, there were so many reasons for so long, or excuses, you know, for so long of why I didn't belong in, you know, in recovery. Why it wasn't, you know, I was not real, an alcoholic. I was not, you know, it was just a phase. It was, you know, early on at 21, I was too young, you know, and many, many other reasons why. But one of the ones that I held on to for a long time was that, you know, neither of my parents drank alcoholically. And neither of their parents drank alcoholically, you know. I remember my grandfather saying, on my dad's side, I remember him saying that water was his favorite drink. And I'm thinking, what? You know, like, you know, so for me, the thing was, is here, I'm sitting there, I'm totally destroying my life, you know, with drinking and, you know, and substance use. My life is totally getting smeared into the pavement. You know, and I'm sitting there coming up with all these excuses of why I'm not, you know, why I shouldn't have to be here, and I shouldn't have to do this thing called recovery. You know, I should be able to just decide not to do it. You know, but you know, kind of fast forward a lot. We came here to the U.S. when I was 15. The first year, we moved to Bartlesville, Oklahoma, from Singapore, and I was just I it sucked. I mean, it was just it was really, really bad. I mean, you know, I kind of look like every, you know, like most of it. I sound like an American, you know, like, I mean, I just kind of I should fit everywhere, but nothing about me, you know, connected with the humor, you know, the normal humor, the way people watching sports. I mean, you know, what? We had two channels. I mean, you know, two channels, and one of them didn't speak English, for the whole day. But, there was those kinds of things that were just kind of fundamentally a shock to my system. Not to mention Singapore is kind of a city very much like Manhattan. And it's in its population density, and you know, Bartlesville, Oklahoma, was not like that. but you know, after the, here's the thing. I fit in, you know, into this crowd that was partying, and I'd smoked pot a few times, and before ever coming to the U.S. When I found the crowd that was partying, it wasn't like that was a crowd that I wanted to be with. You know, I mean, that was like what I wanted to do. It wasn't like, just kind of like my drinking. You know, I hear a lot of times people talk about, you know, having a reason to drink. You know, breaking a shoelace, that would have been a good, you know, reason to drink, and you know, just things like that. And I don't ever remember, except in the last 4 days of my last drunk. Drinking for a reason, you know. It was just something I wanted to do. It didn't matter when it was. You know, I didn't have like this. As far as like my parents, right? There was normal drinking. You know, so there wasn't any bar for me to like. I didn't want to cross that one. Like morning drinking, man. I mean, I was just like, you know, if I can get drunk in the morning, that's great. You know, I mean, that's a better time. You know, and then got a driver's license, that was, I mean, I loved to, I mean, that was my freedom, you know, it's like, or my experience of my freedom was to just get in the car, you know, with a 12-pack and just crank the music and, you know, just let it all go, you know, and I loved to do that for a long time. And, but, you know, the stories that go along, you know, with my drinking are just the same as everybody else's. I mean, different places and different times and different levels and different extremes, you know. But for each one of us, it's all the same. I love that part about when it says that every alcoholic must hit bottom, you know, when we get here. And I remember thinking for a long time that, you know, that there's some kind of level of bottoms, and there's not. You know, everybody's bottom is exactly as low as it possibly can go. You know, and there's no comparison. I mean, between people. I mean, I don't know what that. It's an exercise. I mean, I've done it, but it just doesn't mean, you know, for me anyway. It has no significance. My bottom is my significant is what's significant for me, and you know, it's at that point, and I'm a firm believer too that really, if you want to know when you've hit your bottom, because I remember questioning this, you know, for me, like, you know, how much more can I continue like this, and how much more can I keep going? I mean, I've told myself that I'm gonna stop, that I've had enough is enough, that I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, over and over and over, right? And I meant it, man. I was so tired of drinking and, you know, and doing what I knew I was doing to myself, right? AA didn't ruin my drinking. I mean, I knew, you know, that my drinking was not healthy for me. You know, I drank, my drinking was destructive, like Brent, you know, self-destructive, right? And I knew that. I knew it was not a good thing for me. And I would come to a point and I would say, I promise my, you know, you promised yourself this over and over, and really what it was is when in this building, and this is my I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but that's, you know, that's all right. It was one of the first real openings that I had to the concept of a higher power, right? Or at least, I shouldn't say that. I mean, I knew that I wasn't spinning planets, you know. I mean, that was kind of, you know, and I've had enough, you know, biology to know that there's something pretty amazing, you know, out there. And, you know, but really as far as, you know, any other consideration for a connection with that, really, you know, bless you, it was really of no consequence, you know, or not even anything that I really thought about. You know, I know from time to time, like my mom, she was I would consider her, you know, certainly a spiritual individual, and you know, and there was some things about that I was like, well, you know, mom can do it. Why, you know, maybe it's something that would be there for me. But I mean, there was nothing that kind of was guiding me and, you know, pushing me in that direction. And I had so many different things that just didn't fit with me. You know, whether they were societal or whether they were, you know, organized, you know, religion kind of things, and they fundamentally. For me, I mean, there was these areas that didn't fit. You know, I think probably, honestly, I mean, I love this program. I mean, it's something that has absolutely changed my experience of my life. You know, from the time, just like I said with, you know, with my daughter, I mean, I kind of alluded to it from a financial perspective, but the truth is, you know, my experience in the last 4 years, and what's significant about the last 4 years is I've got a sponsor and worked the steps, okay? And my experience of my life since then has been an absolute. It's been wonderful, you know. And I struggle a lot of times with the words on some of these things, in particular with my relationship with my higher power, and I struggle with how to express that sometimes, you know, and really kind of the best words that kind of come out of my mouth with that, and it's not even a description, it's more of just how I feel about it, is it's really friggin' cool. You know, I mean, I love that, the experience that I'm having with this, you know, you know, whether it doesn't matter to me at all. And that's one of the greatest things that has come through this program. I think probably for me the greatest line that's in the Big Book is choose your own conception. You know, your own conception of God, whatever that is for you, you figure it out. You know, and go from there, build from there. You know, that opens the door to everybody, right, who would otherwise be out there dying, right? Because, you know, because we're all inclusive. We're not exclusive. You know, anybody, if you're struggling with a drink, this is the place for you. You know, and I come in here and I found so many people that were just like me. You know, angels sitting right there, you know. Really, he said something one time. This has been, I don't know, 8 years ago, maybe 6 years ago. And he said something and it was when we were, it was in the little room at the other building during a smoking meeting, that like kind of, you know, the side, you know, you guys smokers are in that little room. And but he said, and he probably didn't even know it at the time, but for me, when I knew that I was screwed, right, with this disease. I knew I was doomed, right? I mean, I've got full knowledge of that several times, that I am in big trouble, you know. And that's, I think, for so many of us, it's that part of it, of this disease, you know, that is hard for us to come to terms with. You know, some people come in and the first time they come in here, they don't ever pick up another white chip. There's many of us like that, right? And there's many of us that need to continue. But I think that it's at that point where we come in here, regardless of whether we pick up many white chips or just one, you know, and we're fully aware that we are dealing with something big here. You know, this is a big, big problem. I mean, it's not a minor inconvenience. I will sacrifice everything, right? Everything. I will sacrifice the love of my daughter, right, for a drink, you know. And because, and I used to think that kind of sounds like blasphemous, but the truth, you know, for me, but the truth is, right, when I come in here and I put this disease in the proper perspective, you know, that it needs to be in, And I sit there and I say that sobriety for me is the most important thing that I do in a day, right? In my day is stay clean and sober. I'm not putting any thing that's near and dear or important to me on any kind of lower level. As a matter of fact, I'm doing just the opposite, right? When I say that, right, and I know that clear as day. The thing with, like, the love that I have with my daughter and the relationship that I have with my daughter, does it put her below that? Hell no, right? That raises her up to a level that she was not on before, when I was out there, you know, saying that this was most important or that was, you know. I mean, so, and that's my truth, right? Or that's the truth of this disease, you know, is that I'll sacrifice everything, you know. For me, you know, really, my experience is that, and it is this way with most of us, right? We talk about that this will come to the gates of its insanity or death, you know, and I know for me too that I was in hell. I mean, I know that in. There's no other description for that, and I love the description in the big book, right? That morass of self-pity, you know, with quicksand stretching around. I mean, I was there so many times, and then I come in here into AA, and I'm given the permission, right? Or given the opportunity is probably a better way of saying it. I'm given the opportunity, and the encouragement, right, to look for things like, well, what does a higher power mean to me? I mean, if the first step is that I'm powerless, right? Okay, and I lack the power, and the first step, you know, and I've had several, you know, many different people who've taught me so many different things over the years, but that first step of powerlessness is that I'm powerless over that thought of picking up a drink. Over any period of time, eventually, I have always done this, and I can use my, my past as my guidepost. Is that eventually I'll always pick up another drink, right? Without anything, with my own efforts in place, right? I'll eventually pick up a drink. So I need to find, if I don't have the power, what do I need, right? I need some power, right? And that came through. Like I was saying just a minute ago, it came through some words that Angel had said. And he kind of defined, or didn't define, I mean, he just said that this is how I perceive my God. And, you know, it was that, you know, something that loved me, doesn't put me through tests, right? Cares about me, works miracles on my behalf, right? And, you know, and those were some of the tenets for me at the time where, you know, I was like, you know, I can deal with that, you know? There was so many other things that I couldn't deal with that I thought that I had to, you know? And AA gave me, you know, allowed that door to open, you know? And I sat there and I took those things and I said, you know, that I can deal with, something that's, you know, that's got my back, right? And I love that thought, right? If there, you know, whether there is or isn't, I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter to me whatsoever. I know that when I take a position, right, and I say that I'm going to believe, I make this decision that I'm going to believe that there's something that's got my back, man, life changes for me. You know, my experience changes. I don't have to pick up a drink or a drug for some strange reason, right? And I continue to go through the rest of the steps. Get the right side, right? You know, you know, or continue to work through the rest of this program, you know, the beautiful part is it's continued to deepen, you know, as I've gone along with that, following the guidance of that, you know, there's people in here like Marion, right, and you know, some of over the years she's been instrumental in me having the relationship with my daughter that I do today. You know, and the relationship that I have with my daughter is just, she's 12 years old, and this relationship keeps getting deeper and deeper. You know, I mean, it's not supposed to be doing that, right? I mean, she's supposed to be totally, like, you know, battling or something. I mean, you know, it's just supposed to be getting worse, but it keeps getting better. You know, how does that happen? You know, that doesn't happen by me going out there getting drunk, like it's something that I did for years and years and years. And but anyway, like for a year, I had a little trouble with the law. Right? They seemed to be very narrow-minded about my drinking and driving, and they didn't see it the same way that I did, you know. And it's a bad thing, you know. I'm not saying that there's anything. But I had lost my license for a long time, where else would we find people? I mean, that we have here in AA. You know, it's just I absolutely appreciate, enjoy, love the people that we have here. You know, for a year and a half, just think of like I don't know that I would do this. You know, I mean, for a year and a half, every other week, and she drove me to Jacksonville and back on Friday, and then did it again on Sunday so I could pick up and spend the weekend with my daughter. You know, I mean, that's just like, I'm so fortunate, I mean, to have got here, you know. And the thing that shocks me the most, right, is the entrance requirements for Alcoholics Anonymous is that I've got to totally fuck everything up, right? I've got to fail, right? I mean, that's what it is, man. I mean, I get here because I've failed, you know? And when I get here, it's like what I'm given, the keys to the kingdom, right? That story. I love that story. You know, I mean, there's been so many Ron. I mean, I get my third DUI, right? And I call, I remember Roy, I mean, many of us in here remember Roy, you know, I know that he had been in some significant trouble with the law. He came down a couple of times to the 33rd Street jail and talked to the juveniles. Just an amazing individual. That's the other thing. Golly, just the examples that have come through this room, you know, are just second to none. You know, and it's so real and deep. You know that I called and I called Roy, and I said, Roy, I just got my third DUI. I got it on a hardship. I was driving on a hardship license, and was totally, it was a bad deal. I backed into somebody, and I said, Roy, I said I need the best DUI lawyer in town, right? And because I was like, I'm going to pay $10,000 at least, right? I kind of knew the deal because this is my third DUI, right? You know, I kind of knew the how that was all going to play out. And I said, Roy, I need the best DUI lawyer in town. And he said, well, best DUI lawyer I know is God, right? And I'm like, it's not what I wanted to hear, right? You know? And so I said, okay, great, thank you. You know, let me call somebody else, right? So I call, who I call? I call Ron. That was probably not the best next move, but at the time, because I've had a couple of great people, you know, in here. Like Roy was tried to help me, tried to sponsor me for a while, and I've had some great people that have led me, or tried to help me. And but I was so self-centered, you know, and I mean I was so I don't know why. For so many years, I mean, I try to figure it out a long time, and I don't know what it takes for people to get to the point of being willing to work the steps, you know, and to do this thing. But I just don't know, because I've had a lot of people try to help me, and but anyway, and so I call Ron, who was I knew had some trouble also legally, and so. Right. So I call him and I ask, Ron, I need some help, man. Who's the best DUI lawyer in town? And so he's Roy's sponsee, right? So what does he say? Best DUI lawyer I know is God, right? And I'm like, oh geez, right? So I call again, and then I finally got smart, right, and called a lawyer that was in here, right? And you know, but the thing is that the way that unfolded, and it's absolutely without question, you know, there's been during that experience, and this was 3.5 years ago, or four and a half years ago, and during that time of that final stretch for me. You know, it was the way things played out, and the people that were in place at that time. You know, we here in Alcoholics Anonymous know alcoholics. We know what to do when somebody's in trouble with this thing, right? We know how to react. We know what to say. We know where to provide help. You know, and as opposed to just giving nice advice. You know, so I remember, you know, people say, like, if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't be here, right? Well, I'm like, yeah, of course not. I mean, where would you be if there was no, you know, I mean? But, you know, the truth is, right? That's what goes through my head. But the truth, I mean, that's absolutely true. And you know, for me, my experience would not be anything. It would be the way that it was. You know, it would be the way that it was before. You know, having been involved in this program, and but anyway, in you know, during that time, there was many different events that took place, and I had many different spiritual experiences during that path, and I had a great friend in this program, Kathy, who's over here, who helped me out absolutely, had the right things to say, knew what to say. When I was sitting there and just pounding beers, like, because remember I said, like, I never drank for a purpose, except really, at least that I remember anyway, except in the last 4 days of this last drunk that I was on. And I was drinking so ferociously, you know, that I just wanted to whatever it took to shut my head up, and you know, and I remember there was a kind of this search party, and this other girl, Karen, right, come over and said, you know, many of us know her. And I remember them saying, let's go to a meeting. And I'm going, hell no. You know, like, I mean, that's like, from my house, it's 20 minutes to the nearest meeting. That's an hour at the meeting and 20 minutes back. That's almost 2 hours away from a drink. I'm not, absolutely not even considering that, you know. And so, I mean, you know, I mean, really, it was so big, you know. And but that's the way, that's my drinking. And it was like that, you know, regularly. I remember just even going to the grocery, you know, going to the convenience store across the street was a big thing. You know, it's like, golly. And the need to drink just drove me out of, you know, out of that bond that I had had myself in. And so anyway, but I remember finally that conceding if they because I had no money, but I was like, okay, but you have to buy me a beer before we go in, right? Now, anybody else other than another alcoholic, right, would say, you've been drinking all day, right? Can't you just go just for 2 hours without a drink? You know, I mean, you know, but did that, you know, was that said? No. I mean, it was like, come on, you know, that's fine, absolutely. And then I remember, too, when we got here, you know, and this was actually over to the Winter Park group, that it was like, okay, when I got there, I remember thinking, there's no way I'm going to get a drink, right? And I was like, you know, okay, so we get a drink, and the answer was, absolutely, let's go get a drink. So, anyway, that was October the 11th, right, of 2004, and it was after that time where through a series of events, going into detox, because I needed more to be checked out. It was 4 days later that I made it in. I needed more to be removed from the normal life kind of things, and I really needed detox. I know that I had been through many worse detoxes, you know, which that's something in this program has taught me. It's taught me. You know, I quit smoking a year and a half ago, and I remember going through the withdrawals of that and thinking, you know, this sucks, but I've been through a lot worse. You know, I mean, you know, and so but just the experience of having come through here, the way things are for me right now, you know, are just so dramatically different. You know, but coming in and finally getting a sponsor, worked with a sponsor for a while, and then knew that I needed to have a different experience in the Big Book. I knew that I'd read it 100 times. I wasn't getting what I needed from my own efforts to read it, and I knew that. And I knew that I needed to have this experience and the experience of a lot of the people that were in here had in this Big Book. And so I went to a Big Book workshop by Rob. California Rob Mason, who's starting the one here tomorrow, and I heard him speak, and I thought, yeah, you know, that helped me out. And so he said, you know, absolutely. We went through a couple of prerequisites, and one of them was to sponsor people. I had to agree to sponsor people, and so we started going, you know, through and finishing the steps, and there's been so many life-changing experiences as a result of that. You know, the experience that I have from now, and sorry, I didn't really. I hope I incorporated the steps anyway, right? but that's, you know, really, if I say nothing else, right? Get a sponsor and work the steps if you have it, right? And there's no excuse to not, right? Now is the time, right here, right now, right? Is the time to do that. You know, and until we start doing that, we don't have anything in place will provide us a different experience. I went for 14 years of trying to get clean and sober, not working the steps, having the same experience. You know, and then after having worked through the steps with the sponsor, the experience has been absolutely unbelievable. It's been a true miracle. If you need a miracle, pray for a miracle. You know, that was one thing that was given to me early on, because I needed a miracle, and I needed something to be different than it had been. You know, every other 50 times that I come back in here again. And so if nothing else, get a sponsor and work the steps. And I don't know, do we have an early, like, we need to shut down or what are we going to do? But anyway, kick me out of here, man. Tell me when to stop. But I think, anyway, so tonight's birthday night, so we at least, I know through doing the Monday meeting here, that we have some time anyway to the end of the meeting. So I think I'm gonna end it with that. But I'd just like to thank everybody in here. I'd like to thank Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know how I could give back what's been given to me in this, through this program. So thank you.